and welcome to Tales of the Resistance, a podcast about antimicrobial resistance. On today's show, as always, we are joined by a rotating lineup of members of the I Am Responsible Project, a nationwide team of educators and researchers working on solutions to antimicrobial resistance. I'm Beth, one of your hosts today, and I'm joined by Mara.
Hey, everybody.
And Amber.
Hello.
On today's show, we'll be talking about some interesting new findings on antimicrobial resistance.
So today, I wanted to talk about an article that I found, and the original research is in the New England Journal of Medicine, Allen et al., 2023, so just this year. The title of the article is Azithromycin to Prevent Sepsis or Death in Women Planning a Vaginal Birth. And you can also find a summary, shorter research summary of this on SIDREP. And we'll get some of these links put into the show notes on this if people are interested in reading more closely. But basically, this article is a large multi-country study of the use of a prophylactic antibiotic. That means that you're given a dose of antibiotics before you actually have an active infection, when you are sort of at higher risk of infection. So there's a study where a prophylactic, so preventative treatment with antibiotic before vaginal birth, reduced maternal sepsis or death. And the percentage comparison between the two was pretty high, but the overall rate occurred in 1.6% of women who had azithromycin had sepsis or death, and 2.4% in the placebo group. And I guess one of the reasons that this was interesting to me, the first thing was, and I don't want to sort of get too in the weeds on this, but the headline numbers are all about the very high difference in the percentage when you go from 2.4% to 1.6%. You're cutting that like by 50%. But the actual risk difference is between 2.4% chance to 1.6% chance. So this is a really good example when you get into the actual numbers and you're thinking about what does that mean to me, of how it is important that we contextualize scientific data. So that was the first line takeaway for me, is that we're going to talk about a 50% reduction in maternal sepsis or death, and we're talking about the difference in a 1% level of risk. And so, like, a lot of people will say 1% difference is small in terms of a change in your level of risk. But when you talk about a population of people who are getting ready for undergoing vaginal birth, then you are talking about millions of people. The study also goes on to sort of differentiate. They did lump sepsis and death together because the rates of death in this study were low. And so they couldn't actually, there wasn't anything significant, statistically significant, that they could say about that. So most of this time we're talking about cases of sepsis, which is a sort of a poisoning of the blood. And it certainly can lead to death, but as we see in this case, not in all cases. But you do get very sick, and it can be very dangerous. In terms of a discussion question, a couple of things that I wanted to pose to you, I mean, besides your overall takeaway from this article, and I do want to hear your thoughts on that. But I also, my first thought was, you know, this is the balance to our discussion of antimicrobial resistance. We are banging the drum about the importance of these drugs. And we are talking about how we need to preserve them and use them wisely and not overuse them. And this is a sort of illustration of the importance. This prophylactic use reduced the risk of having sepsis by 1%, millions of people potentially, if this was widely applied. And so you see the value of the drugs and why we need to preserve them. I don't know, what did you guys think?
I think it's an interesting approach because I don't think of antibiotics in terms of preventative measures. I think of it as an afterthought, like after an infection has occurred. And I wonder those of us that work in AMR, we're always trying to find ways to prevent antibiotic use. So I think, okay, is it absolutely necessary? But to see such a big difference made, it is necessary. I wonder if the mothers or even the doctors have any resistance to prescribing these antibiotics, knowing the concerns of AMR.
That's exactly right, Amber. It's that we're thinking about the limiting the use of antibiotics, and it can seem on first glance that if it's not an actual disease, then how do you know they're going to get it? And maybe you shouldn't be prescribing these preventatives. But it really is the human factor. I mean, someone could die if they don't give these antibiotics. I mean, even if someone gets sepsis, that also creates the use of probably more antibiotics because they have sepsis and they're trying to get that cured, and that also uses antibiotics. So anytime that it's preventing that situation, how can you like morally say you have a small percentage of death, but we're not going to give you this because we're worried about death in the future? How difficult that would be for a doctor to have to weigh that. I need to think about the long term, but this immediate human being in front of me could die or have serious complications because I didn't give them a preventative antibiotic. So I think that when considering the use of preventative antibiotics, the question of what are going to be the consequences if I don't use them. And another thing I was thinking of is when you're deciding whether or not to use an antibiotic, if it's not a life or death question, whether or not one is used could also be answered by, is this a broad spectrum antibiotic or a narrow spectrum antibiotic? So is this antibiotic something like penicillin, for example, that's going to be used in a lot of different ways? A lot of different illnesses can be cured by that. And that becoming even more, because it already has a lot of problems with antimicrobial resistance, if that becoming even more of a problem because of antimicrobial resistance, was it right really to use it in that situation? Whereas if it's a narrow spectrum antibiotic, then it doesn't have as many uses outside of that exact targeted illness. So maybe it's something that a doctor might feel more comfortable using because it might not have as many impacts as far as future other deaths.
And it's probably going to take a lot of research to really be able to define that kind of thing. So you give a prophylactic, again, none of us are doctors, so, you know, this is our understanding. We're happy to be corrected. But in my understanding, you give a prophylactic when you think there's a high chance you're going to get an infection. And usually that's because you've weakened the body in some way. Maybe there's a wound, or I've been given prophylactic antibiotics when I had surgery. Now, there are a wide range in that case of possible infections that you could get. Sepsis, for example, can be caused by a number of different types of bacteria. So we would need to have a lot more data and probably maybe the ability to kind of predetermine something about a person's microbiome there to see what they're most likely to get and actually have a narrow spectrum. But we're probably a long way from that for this kind of application, because there are just so many bacteria who could cause sepsis or could cause an infection in a weakened person. There's a whole range we call opportunistic pathogens that may be a part of your like natural flora, the natural species that live on or even inside you that are normally sort of benign. But if you're in a weakened condition, your immune system is compromised in some way, that balancing effect that you're immune system can have on those populations is taken away, and they sort of take over, and then they become a real problem for you when ordinarily they're just on you all the time. So it'd be a real struggle to have enough information to know what narrow spectrum antibiotics to give in a prophylactic sense, but it would be a really cool thing that if we could do that. Yeah, for sure.
I think you make a good point about how these prophylactic antibiotics are used usually when like someone's about to have a, you know, they're about to have a surgery, or in this case, they're about to have childbirth situation. So it's not used in a more common, just, I think you have a cold, you better use this just in case kind of situation. It's usually something more serious when it has to do with human health. But I do want to also talk about how there is a lot of preventative antibiotics used in like livestock and aquaculture farming. And the interesting thing about how they use preventative antibiotics is that they have a lot of research out there about when an animal is going to get sick. So for instance, in dairy cows, they usually know what time in their milking stage or their birthing stage that it's likely to have a illness. So then they'll use a lot of times a preventative.
Yes, you're right. There's been a lot of research over the years to try to identify the windows of highest risk for infection. And then they use a preventative application, a prophylactic application. It's not a guarantee. You're not treating a sick animal. You're simply trying to get ahead of it.
In many ways, it's the same as the article. You know, the animal's at highest risk when giving birth and lactating, and it's the same for humans.
Very true. That's true.
What I thought was interesting about this article, if you read through in more detail, they talk about how, you know, this kind of application has already been tested pretty widely for cesarean birth. Well, that makes sense because that's a wound, right? Mm-hmm. And we're really concerned with sepsis. Now, we know from history that vaginal birth is also very risky for the mother for the possibility of having sepsis, but it hadn't been tested here, probably because it wasn't considered as risky, which it's not. But I mean, there is risk there, and we still see a pretty substantial reduction in the risk factor when we use a preventative antibiotic in this case. Of course, we know that there's a possibility then that you're increasing your risk of getting a resistant infection, or the population is increasing its risk of resistant infection. So it's a mixed bag, but I don't know, this got me thinking, this is a little off track of this particular case, but I remember one time I was in a discussion about the use of antibiotics worldwide, and someone said there's a problem with overuse of antibiotics in many places outside of the sort of developed world. They don't have prescription requirements for the use of antibiotics. But as long as people are at higher risk of dying because they don't have an antibiotic, or because the antibiotics, quote unquote, that are available for them to buy are substandard, then you are very unlikely to actually see people choose to use less antibiotic, to take on a sort of stewardship footing, because they are looking at their risks realistically, that they're more likely to die without the medicine because they don't have access to the medicine always. Mm-hmm. And there's their healthcare that is available to them may not be able to deal with. I think we've talked about in this podcast before, this sort of antibiotics is a treatment. And it is very effective treatment, but it's not the only treatment. If you don't have effective antibiotics, that doesn't necessarily mean you are going to die from every bacterial infection that you get, but it usually means that your symptoms will be more serious, that you may be sick longer. And if you are in an environment where the medical care that you will receive during those more serious symptoms and that longer period of illness can't really handle it, either there's too many people or there's a lot more infection in the medical spaces, and you're looking at a very high likelihood that you won't make it, then no rational person would not take antibiotics every time they were sick.
Right.
Stay home. stay safe.
Yeah, I think also there is there's an interesting dichotomy in some low and middle income countries between the fact that there is a lot of antibiotic use, but also there's not enough antibiotics available. So I think it's kind of what you're saying. You had mentioned that if it's substandard antibiotics that are out there that are being used for that for those populations, or if there isn't the right kind of antibiotic, because you know how you sometimes it has to get very a more narrow spectrum antibiotic would be better in that situation. But if they don't have it, someone's just going to use what they can, even if it might not be necessarily the best antibiotic they can use. So if it's not available, then someone has to just use what they have. And there's no way you can look at that and say, well, man, you should have been more careful there. Now you're using a bunch of antibiotics. That's not a very humane way of thinking about the situation. Is the real answer should be, why don't they have more access then to antibiotics? You know, if you really want to solve antibiotic resistance, then get more of the right kind of antibiotic available. And that's not to say there isn't prescribing practices that need to be talked about in other countries and in our own country, but there's definitely other conversations to be had about prescribing practices, since sometimes antibiotics are more widely available outside of a over-the-counter use. But I think when considering why there's a lot of antibiotic use that maybe shouldn't be happening in some other countries, one has to take into consideration the fact that they might not have the right access to the right kind of antibiotic.
Mm-hmm. And I guess this is going back a little bit, but it kind of comes back to the point we're making about a doctor's decisions. And it's not just whether they want to treat the patient in front of them or whether they want to preserve antibiotics for the future. They have an ethical obligation as a physician to treat. You know, they have to take care of their patients.
And right, they and want, liability.
Yes, yes. So they're not going to take the alternative when presented with a study like this. If there continues to be additional research about this and this becomes a widely applied practice, they're not going to say, I'm not going to give you a prophylactic dose of antibiotics. If the research shows that the risk level for their patient is reduced significantly, then I think they're going to give them antibiotics. And we have to find ways to improve that application and improve our stewardship overall. But this paper really demonstrates why we have to preserve antibiotics, because they are powerful tools that help in the survival of our species. So we have to preserve them. It just means that our job is that much harder because they are so valuable.
Mara, I think that was a good insight there about how when we're using preventative medicine in these situations, that is the exact time that we want to use antibiotics in these life or death situations. Like the goal of our reducing antibiotic use to try to prevent antibiotic resistance isn't that we never use antibiotics ever. It's that they still will work in these exact situations when they're really vital to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't want to lose sight of the fact that our sort of mission to use antibiotics wisely for everybody to be a part of addressing the growing crisis, with the end goal is not simply to put all the drugs back in the cupboard. It's that we have them when we need to use them.
Circling back, like you said, for a cesarean birth, it makes sense that they would prescribe an antibiotic prophylactically. But with vaginal births, I wonder if it could be by a patient-by-patient basis rather than just every woman giving a vaginal birth or having a vaginal birth, rather. Because I think you kind of know your patient, and if they have a higher risk, perhaps, you know, if they're a higher risk patient, then it makes sense to kind of prophylactically prescribe an antibiotic. But and I'm not a doctor, I don't see it being necessary in healthy young women. I don't know. What probably. Do you think?
I would guess that they will consider it within a range of options. More research will need to be done. That's the thing with every time you read a study, no matter how well done it is, you usually will want to see additional research that has the same findings before you try and change practice on something. One study does not science make, you know, in sort of the big all caps, this is a experiment, a study. So I think you would want to see more data on this. And it is interesting finding, and it hopefully will be an application that could save lives in balance with the question of antimicrobial resistance. And you're right, Amber, I think you would need to take, because you're trying to take those two things into account, consider, and they consider antibiotic use on a case-by-case basis already. There are guidelines for antibiotic use that will help them in those decision-making, but it's just another quiver in the bow, shall we say.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today on Tales of the Resistance. That is our time for today, so we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.